we were introduced to the delightful mountains several chapters ago. Perhaps you recall before Christian departed from Palace Beautiful, he was taken up to a high peak in order to see the delightful mountains, which we were told at the time was located in Emmanuel's land. Well, since that day, the pilgrim has been brought low, very low. But today, he's about to come to those mountains. Last week, the pilgrims were able to escape from giant despair and make it safely back to the way that leads to the celestial city. The pilgrims have just left a very low and difficult time in their pilgrimage. In fact, the two scenes that make up last week's lesson and this week's lesson are the very opposite trajectories of what we saw earlier in the book. Earlier, Christian left the heights of Castle Beautiful only then to immediately go way down into the Valley of Humiliation. Now they've been in the low place of Doubting Castle, but are now about to ascend to the very top of the Delightful Mountains. Bunyan had a great grasp of Christian experience. He understood that there are ups and there are downs. But one thing he has highlighted in this chapter, is that through all of the highs and the lows, through the valleys and the peaks, God is sovereign over all of our experiences, all of them. And he's working all of them together for our good. That truth is communicated in a song that I've grown to particularly like. It says this. The song starts out with, "I come, God, I come. I return to the Lord, the one who's broken and torn me apart. You struck me down to bind me up. And you say you do it all in love, that I might know you in your suffering." Whether it's the Valley of Humiliation or Doubting Castle, the Sovereign Lord takes us down so that he might take us up again. And he does it all in love. When the pilgrims finally ascended to the top of the mountain, we're told that they spotted gardens and vineyards and fountains of water. They drank, they washed themselves, and they ate freely from these vineyards. Now, on top of these mountains, they also found shepherds standing beside the highway feeding their flocks. The pilgrims approached and asked the shepherds, "Whose delightful mountains are these? And whose are the sheep that are feeding on them?" To which the shepherds responded, "These mountains are Emmanuel's land. And from here, pilgrims are within sight of his city. And as for the sheep, they're also his. In fact, he laid down his life for them." So, what have we here? What is Bunyan doing? The pilgrims went up on a mountain and found it a place of abundant fruitfulness. It's a place where shepherds are feeding God's sheep. And not only that, it's a place where God is with his people, Emmanuel's land. And what we're about to see, it's also a place of rest and relief for pilgrims. I believe Bunyan is again painting for us a picture of the local church. It seems that the pilgrims learned a valuable lesson. Remember how last week Chuck pointed out the fact that the pilgrims were inclined to leave this difficult path for an easier path. And when they came across this man called Vain Confidence, they asked where this path leads to. And he told them, "Oh, it leads to the celestial city." And they immediately took his word for it and went off the true path. Now, the pilgrims come to the delightful mountains to these shepherds, and they become much more inquisitive, asking, "Is this the way to the celestial city?" And they said, "Yeah, you're in the way." And then they ask, well, how far is it to there? And notice the shepherd's answer. He said this. The question was, how far is it to there? And he said, too far for anyone except those who indeed get there. The surprising answer turns the pilgrim's focus from responsible perseverance to God's sovereign decree. Both aspects are true, but here the indication is that responsible perseverance is ultimately based upon God's sovereign decree. For God's elect, the celestial city is not too far ahead. But for others, it's an impossible distance. Presumption is challenged, sovereign grace is upheld, and for the assured pilgrim, there's hope, even if he might be weak. The next question from the pilgrim is, well, is the way safe or dangerous? And again, the shepherd's answer is interesting. Safe for those whom it is to be safe, but the rebellious will stumble in it. Again, he highlights both God's election and human responsibility. Is the way safe? Well, for the elect, there is no chance of anything bringing such harm to them as to keep them from arriving. But to those who are rebellious, there is no chance they will make it without stumbling. Now, as Christian recalls from Palace Beautiful, he remembered what a time of rest and refreshment he received there. And now he longs for that repeat experience, if you will, because he had exhaustion. Therefore, he asked, is there a place of relief here for weary pilgrims? And what we find is that these faithful shepherds have been careful to anticipate the needs of strangers. And they answer, the Lord of these mountains has commanded us not to forget to entertain strangers. Therefore, the goodness of this place lies before you. Just as the watchman at Palace Beautiful did, the shepherds here on Delightful Mountain will thoroughly question the pilgrims. They will ask them questions like this. How did you get in the way? Where did you come from? What have you done to persevere in the way? And they go on to say, for only a few of those who begin to come here actually show their face on this mountain. And when the shepherds heard all the answers that the pilgrims gave, it says that they lovingly took them by the hand and welcomed them in. Now, before I go any further, I want to highlight that again for you. They asked them all these questions. They heard all their answers. And they, with much love, grabbed them by the hand and welcomed them in. We'll come back to why I wanted to point that out to you in a moment. But the four shepherds were told, their names were Knowledge. There were four shepherds, okay? I think that's a sign that we're onto something here at Grace Baptist Church with four elders. Knowledge, experience, watchfulness, and sincerity. I tried to figure out which one of us were each of those things. But I kept just seeing me as all four of them, and I was struggling with anybody else, so... But we'll talk about that later. But they welcomed them in and said, come in so that and stay for a while so that we can get well acquainted with you. The pilgrims agreed. We're told that they came in, they ate, it was late, they went to bed for the night and got rest. But when the next morning came, the shepherds called Christian and Hopeful to walk with them upon the mountains. So they went with them, to walk for a while. And having on all their sides pleasant views of the terrain around them. And the shepherds, talking with one another, considering the pilgrims and what they had heard about them the night before, asked, "Shall we show these pilgrims some wonders?" And even questioned, "Which ones should we show them?" They decided to do it. And after talking with these pilgrims the previous evening, these wise shepherds knew the types of lessons that these particular pilgrims needed to hear. You're about to notice that the things these shepherds are about to teach these two pilgrims both center on the pilgrims' need for perseverance. They're going to give them great warnings lest they fail to make it to the city. Now, if you were to read part two of the story, you would see that these same shepherds deal with Christiana and Mercy and the group that comes with them. In time Christiana and Mercy get to the Delightful Mountains, their small group is now much larger group. They have added on, where some people have critiqued Bunyan of making the Christian walk too individualistic. Well, he certainly corrected if he thought it was a weakness in the second one, because the time they got to the Delightful Mountain, there were many, many people in the group with Christiana and Mercy. But what we're told about the group that was with them is that it was filled with what he called weak and feeble Christians. They were people like much doubt and much fear, and with names such as that. But what these four shepherds do is, when Christiana and Mercy and their group appears, they treat them and deal with them in a much different way than they deal with Christian and Hopeful. I believe Bunyan intends to give us a clue as to what he sees intended the difference to be in part two. Here's what he says. Here's what the shepherds had to say to each other in preparation for what they would show the weaker Christians later on. The shepherd said, "All things must be managed for helping the weak as well as warning the idle." I believe the clue that he gives us here is that Bunyan sees Christians' inclination, his Christian life, he sees Christians' inclination going again and again towards idleness. If you remember Christians' life early on, where Chuck taught us how Christian fell asleep at Mount Arbor, a place where he wasn't meant to stay there and sleep, lost his scroll, ended up having to go back. Last week, he showed us of how Christian's desire for ease led him off the path. And as he was sleeping in the wrong place at the wrong time is when giant despair came and captured him. At the conclusion of this chapter, when the Christians are about to leave the four shepherds, when Christian and Hopeful are about to leave the four shepherds and to keep go on the way, one of the warnings that these shepherds gives to Christian is, don't fall asleep in the enchanted ground. Christian, they'd picked up on the fact that he was inclined to idleness. After considering these two pilgrims, after hearing what they were prone to fall into, the shepherds knew they needed to be warned because dangers lied ahead. They needed to be warned. Now, I pointed out a moment ago, they heard their testimonies and then they rejoicingly opened up their hand, lovingly grabbed them by the hands and welcomed them in. I think it's important to highlight that, because The pattern of the Bible is that biblical warnings are not primarily for people that are suspected of being hypocrites. Biblical warnings are intended for saints. Warnings are used by the sovereign God to see to it that his people remain faithful and grow in faithfulness and in diligence. And we'll see that that's exactly what's going to happen in the story before us. The first place that they took Christian and Hopeful was to the top of a mountain called Error. And we're told it was very, very steep mountain on the farthest side. And they led them to the edge of it and told them to look down at the bottom. So Christian and Hopeful looked down, and they saw at the bottom several men who were dashed to pieces because they had fallen from the top. Christian asked an appropriate question, "What does this mean?" To which the shepherds answered, "Haven't you heard about those who were caused to err by listening to Hymenaeus concerning the faith of the resurrection of the body?" Referring to 2 Timothy. But Christian said, "Yes." And the shepherd said, "Well, those lying dashed to pieces at the bottom of this mountain are those individuals. You see, they have continued to this day, unburied, for an example to the others, to take heed how they clamor too high or how they come too near to the edge of the mountain." Now, notice in this warning, these aren't the bones of Hymenaeus. These are the bones of the people led astray by this false teacher. The shepherds are telling them, "You are responsible for who you listen to. You're responsible for who you follow." Early on in the book, he showed us, again, Chuck showed us, that Bunyan was showing us what a faithful minister is when he was in the house of the interpreter, when he was showed the picture of the godly man. But what Bunyan is doing here is pointing our attention to what a faithful minister does and doesn't do. As you travel towards the celestial city, the path will take you to some high points of elevation. But if you go beyond, if you aren't content with what is revealed, and you attempt to go higher, or if you get close to the edge, he wants us to see that the end is destruction. And he's saying, so be careful whom you listen to. Be very careful whom you follow. Then he took him to another mountain, a mountain called Caution, and asked them to look far off in the distance. And when they did, they saw several men walking around among the tombs that were there. And they could perceive that these men were blind because they kept stumbling over the tombs and they couldn't get out from among the tombs. So again, Christian says, well, what does this mean? What does this mean? The shepherds asked them, well, a short distance below these mountains, there was a set of steps that led into a meadow on the left-hand side of the way. Did you happen to see that? And the Christian and this pilgrims were like, yeah. Now, let me remind you, if you weren't here last week, the steps that he's describing were the steps that the Christians actually, that the pilgrims took that led them to Doubting Castle. The shepherd said, well, from those steps goes a path that leads to directly to Doubting Castle, which is kept by Giant Despair. And these men, pointing to the tombs, once came on the pilgrimage, as you are now, until they came to those steps. Because the right way is rough in that place, they chose to leave it, to go to that meadow, and there were taken by Giant Despair and cast into Doubting Castle. There, after they had been kept a while in the dungeon, he finally put out their eyes and led them among those tombs. He's left them there to wander to this very day, so that the saying of the wise man might be fulfilled. A man who strays from the path of understanding comes to rest in the company of the dead. Bunyan said that Christian and Hopeful looked at each other with tears pouring out their eyes. At once, it must have been obvious to them, but for the grace of God, there go we. Finally, now, did they more fully realize to what degree they were objects of sovereign grace. But there was still something else to be seen. In a valley against an unnamed hill, the pilgrims have their attention pointed towards a door. When they approached the door, the shepherds opened it and invited them to look into it. They looked in, and they saw that it was very dark and smoky. They also thought that they heard there a rumbling noise like fire, and the cry of people tormented, and smelled the scent of burning sulfur. And again, Christian asked, "What does this mean?" And the shepherds told them, "This is an entrance to hell, through which hypocrites go, such as those who sell their birthright like Esau, such as those who sell their master with Judas, such as those who blaspheme the gospel with Alexander, who lie and pretend with Ananias and Sapphira." Evidently, Bunyan believed that pastoral exhortation for the saints ought to include warnings about the doctrine of God. Why? Because he knew what we stated earlier, that biblical warnings, that Christians will take biblical warnings to heart and be spurred on to greater faithfulness. Christian and Hopeful are probably not entirely ignorant of this place. But as we read on in Bunyan's story, what really disturbs the pilgrims is the background of the inhabitants of hell, and particularly the reason for their incarceration. The shepherds are well able and consider it necessary to identify the marks of those who have earned their reward in hell. He told us who they are, the type of people that walk through that door. In part two, Mercy asks, she had heard about this door, and they weren't immediately shown it, so she asked the shepherds if she could see the door. And when she was able to walk up to the door and listen in, she was actually able to hear things that were being said inside the door by those who were being tormented. Bunyan recorded what she heard like this. One cry from the pit of hell was, "Cursed be my father for holding back my feet from the way of peace and life." Another one said, "Oh, I wish I'd have been torn to pieces before I lost my soul to save my life." A third one clearly said, "If I were to live again, how I would deny myself rather than come to this place." Then Hopeful said to the shepherds, "I suppose that each and every one of these presented a show of going on the pilgrimage just as we're doing now, didn't they?" And the shepherds said, "Yes, and they stayed on a pilgrimage a long time too." "Well, how far would they have gone on the pilgrimage in their day if they had not been so miserably cast away?" asked Hopeful. And again the shepherds said, "Some make it farther than this, and others not as far as these mountains." The shepherds recount that some counterfeit pilgrims have progressed even farther than these mountains. Soon, in a few weeks, we'll get a glimpse of a man named Ignorance, a hypocrite who makes it all the way to the gates of the celestial city. The pilgrims, they think about, they ponder that all of these people in hell had come this far and had evidenced considerable endurance. They had made it all the way up the hill of difficulty. They had resided at the Palace Beautiful. What had they experienced at the Valley of Humiliation? They had persevered through Vanity Fair. And now their voices are heard crying out night and day from the pit of hell. Interesting that Bunyan puts hell at this point of the story. Usually when we think about preaching hell, it's like in an evangelistic sermon. But Bunyan includes the entryway to hell at this graphic description of hell strategically at this point, I believe for a reason. Why? I think it's because of this. Christian had been on journey for some time now. A great amount of time had passed since he began. He's growing older. He's had many experiences. He's approaching the end of his journey. And although the church today gives lots of attention towards younger people because we want them to start off strong, we want them to make a faithful transition from teenagers to adulthoods, Bunyan and the wise shepherds of the Reformed Baptist Church of the Delightful Mountains know that older people, after years of serving the Lord faithfully, can and will be tempted to let off the gas and coast. And in light of all that we've encountered in this chapter, I feel the need to speak a little more on this subject of hell, because there are many false teachings leading pilgrims to the edge of Mount Error. A flood of false doctrine fills the church. Bunyan is trying to show us that a faithful shepherd is one who will warn the saints about the reality of hell. We live in a day when even ministers are telling us that God is too merciful to punish souls forever, that the love of God is too great to do such a thing. We're told that the view of our fathers about hell and the devil and punishment, they're obsolete, they're old-fashioned. The question as to the reality of hell is no mere academic question. It isn't to be classified with disputes about how the end of times are finally going to play out. It's not to be compared with the mysteries of Ezekiel's temple or the symbolism in Revelation. The question of hell lies at the very heart of the whole gospel. The character of God, His justice, His holiness, His purity, they're all involved in it. And the scriptures have plainly spoken on this subject. If words mean anything, there has to be a place called hell. And if passages of Scripture are treated fairly, there are those who will be cast into it forever. And it should be settled in our minds that the same Bible that teaches that God in His mercy and compassion sent Christ to die for sinners also teaches that God hates sin and must, from His very nature, punish all who cleave to sin and refuse the salvation that He's provided. The same chapter that declares that God so loved the world also declares that the wrath of God remains on all unbelievers. The same gospel that promises all who believed will be saved also proclaims in the same breath that the one who does not believe shall perish. If you would be a healthy Christian, then you should give a place in your theology to hell. I think I should probably say you should give hell a place in your theology. Let it be settled in your minds that God is a God of judgment as well as mercy. and that the same everlasting counsels that laid the foundation for the bliss of heaven have also laid the foundation for the miseries of hell. And keep it in full view of your mind that all who die unpardoned and outside of Christ must be lost forever. And beware, if we've learned anything from Mount Error, we should beware of any ministry that does not teach plainly the reality and eternality of hell. Such a ministry may be soothing and pleasant, but it is far more likely to lull you to sleep than to lead you to Christ. That preaching is sadly defective, which dwells exclusively on the mercies of God and the joys of heaven, and never sets forth the terrors of the Lord and the miseries of hell. It may be popular, but it's not scriptural. And it may be amuse you, but it can't save you. It may seem stern and harsh. One may say that to frighten people is not the way to do them good. My response would be, we're forgetting the main objective of the gospel. It's to persuade men to flee from the wrath to come. And it seems vain to expect men to flee if they're not afraid. Bunyan surely wants us to be aware of this. Some will perish because they never leave the city of destruction. Some will make it a long way. They will go through many things and have great experiences to report, but they too, in the end, will perish. So my older brothers and sisters, it's not about how well you began. You must finish the race. Do not trust in the experiences you've had along the way. You must continue to run as to receive a prize. Don't rest in the service that you did in your younger years, for only those who persevere to the end will be saved. No more and no less. You can't let off the gas and coast into heaven. You must finish clinging on to Christ more fervently. Your kids are all grown and out of the house. It's not a time to relax. Instead, it is a time to refocus and to recommit, because there's only one life and it soon will be past, and only what's done for Christ will last. My younger brothers and sisters, you cannot play forever. A time is coming when you must be serious. You can't always be hanging out and laughing and eating and drinking and watching movies and reading and being cool and jesting. A day is coming when we will have a reckoning with God. And I beg you today to look Bunyan's warnings squarely in the face. Don't silence your conscience by vague hopes of God's mercy while your heart cleaves to the world. And don't hush the spirit of convictions with thoughts of God's love while our lives show, perhaps your lives show every day, that the love of the Father just isn't in you. His mercy is like a river, but only to the repentant. And his love towards sinners is unspeakable, but to only those who hear Christ's voice and follow him. You have only one life, and it soon will be past, and only what's done for Christ will last. when they heard these last things, this last thing the pilgrims said to one another, we have great need to cry out to the strong for strength. They hear these warnings and it moves them to pray for help. The pilgrims reason that if some apostates, if some hypocrites can make it so far through their natural ability and yet be lost, then to actually enter the gates of the celestial city, they need the power of God. In view of the trials that are known ahead, the shepherds are in full agreement, and both as to the need of this power and what to do with it when they get it. The shepherd says, yes, and you will have need to use it when you receive it. We need to pray for power, yes, and you need to use it when you receive it. By this time, the pilgrims had a desire to continue on their journey. And the shepherds agreed they should, so they walked together towards the end of the mountains. Then the shepherds said to one another, if they have the skill to look through our perspective lens, let's now show the pilgrims the gates to the celestial city. The pilgrims accepted the idea, so the shepherds, we're told, took them to the top of the hill called Clear and gave them a lens to look through. They attempted to look, but the memory of what they had just seen caused their hand to shake so much that it hindered them, and they couldn't steady the lens well to see clearly. But they thought they saw something that looked like a gate and also some of the glory of the place. The contour of this chapter reflects the larger contour of the Christian life as it's seen in this book. The pilgrims begin this chapter by reaching the heights of the delightful mountains, but even while they're there, they're taken down even to the depths of the doors of hell. And the chapter ends with them getting to see from afar the glory of the city for which they yearn. That city is never reached except through much difficulty. But to those whom it's been given, it's always reached. The verse, the next verse to the song that I spoke of at the very beginning, says this: my heart and flesh may fail, the earth below give way, but with my eyes, I'll see the Lord. Lifted high on that day, behold the Lamb that was slain, and I'll know every tear was worth it all. Brothers and sisters, hardships and difficulties are all along the way. Tears and sleepless nights are not foreign concepts to pilgrims. But let the warnings that we've heard today prod us on. Let us not grow weary. The one for whom we long to see has planned out every single step we take and every experience we encounter along the way. Indeed, he's walked this path before us. He's entered through the door and has experienced those sighs and groanings that we've been warned of. And he overcame so that you and I can overcome. He knows the lows and he knows the highs. And in love, he both warns us and invites us so that we will come to him in the place that he's prepared for us. Would you pray with me? Father, I would pray that your Holy Spirit would work in our lives, that you would rouse our slumbering eyes, warm our cold hearts, keep us on the way, we would ask. Help us to hear these warnings and to respect these warnings, but yet believing in the sweet and sovereign grace of God, help us to live with boldness and confidence that the one who has begun a good work in us will bring it to completion on that day. Amen. You can be dismissed.